Welcome to Topical Talks with Title Research, the podcast where we talk to legal professionals about their areas of expertise. My name is Andrea Pierce, and today I'm joined by Tim Farmer, founder and managing director of multi-award-winning mental capacity assessors TSF Consultants. Tim is also an award-winning author and expert witness specialising in the assessment of mental capacity and financial vulnerability. He has over 25 years' experience of working with adults and children with reduced mental capacity and has completed more than 3,500 mental capacity assessments during his time. Tim was also a mental health nurse initially, and he's also had evidence accepted by the Court of Protection in a previous case, which I'm sure he'll talk to us about, and he's also a committee member of the National Mental Capacity Forum. So, welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Andrea. Good to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure we've got an interesting discussion ahead of us today, but I just thought we could start with you giving us a bit more background, a bit more information about your background and where you came from, and that'll be over to you.
Okay. So as you rightly said, I'm a nurse by trade, so I'm a mental health nurse by trade. I qualified years ago, and I spent over 25 years working with individuals with reduced capacity and mental health problems. I mean, I first started way back in the early 90s, the 80s, working with adults with learning disabilities in some of the first community homes. And then from there, I've worked in a whole range of fields. So done a lot of work with people with learning disabilities and managed what we call dual diagnosis units. So people with learning disabilities and mental health problems at the same time. I've worked in high security units in Bermuda. I've worked with the Aboriginals Australia. I've managed eating disorder and specialist self-harm units. And the last placement I did before focusing full-time on capacity, I was managing liaison psychiatry services for Gloucestershire. So all the mental health teams that work in all the general hospitals. And it was really working with the teenage girls with the eating disorder and the suicide assessments I was doing as liaison that it kind of got me really involved in the Mental Capacity Act. In fact, the reason I set up TSF Consultants was I was approached by a solicitor who asked me once if I could do capacity assessments, and he kind of noted that it was the preserve of the doctors, and I commented, well, I was the one that trained the doctors, so why couldn't I do it? And there was no legal precedence at the time, so I, as far as we can tell, I became the first mental health nurse to have evidence accepted by the Court of Protection. And at the time, I looked around, and I felt that the provision of assessments was poor. The average turnaround time was 4 months. The quality was generally poor. Wasn't always, as with all these things, I don't want to tie everybody with the same brush. But I looked around and felt there has to be a better way to do this, and we need to improve. So that was why I set up TSF, to improve the way that things are done and to make sure people get the right outcomes at the right time. I'm very passionate about it.
And when you say that the quality was poor, was that in relation to the understanding of the legal professional involved, or was that the referral for the capacity assessment?
So I think, we're going back to 2011, so it was only, it wasn't long after the Mental Capacity Act had actually come into being, even though it was passed in 2005, it didn't come into play till 2008. So it was still fairly early doors. And I think it was a combination of, certainly as practitioners, those that are working in a hospital didn't realise how the Capacity Act should be applied and how it should be applied within the legal setting and the legal field. I remember talking to solicitors at the time, and they were saying it wasn't unusual for them to ask the doctor for a capacity assessment and to get one sentence back saying they lack capacity, and that's it. no evidence, no referring to case law, no actual application of the Mental Capacity Act in any shape or form. And then I think, you know, on the other side, you know, solicitors and financial professionals, legal professionals, were all still trying to get their head round, you know, what it meant in practice and what information would be required for an assessment. And yeah, it's interesting to see how much things have changed and how much things have improved over the years since then.
Yeah. And from the practitioner point of view, what, because as a practitioner, it's kind of, it's a kind of weird hybrid role, isn't it? That you're trying to play. If you have a client in front of you, you know, you're trying to apply the Mental Capacity Act, but, you know, you're doing it day in, day out in your role, and it's expected of a private client practitioner to, you know, have such a sort, A, you can have an understanding of it, B, it's that practical application of it, isn't it, where you can really add value and, you know, the types of questioning. So from a practitioner point of view, what are the challenges that they face that you have seen over the years?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you've hit one of the major challenges right on the head, in that, you know, it's a specialised role. And as kind of legal financial practitioners, you're there trying to do your professional role, but at the same time, you know, see if there's issues around capacity. And it would be ridiculous to expect professionals, legal professionals, to have the depth of knowledge that we as assessors have. And so I think one of the real challenges, and it's always been there, is how do you identify the flags to or the indicators that say, look, here's a problem here, and now I need to refer it on to someone else. Over the last certainly 5 years, there's been a big emphasis on training, and there is a lot greater knowledge. And so I think people are much better these days at flagging up that there might be an issue or that there's a concern. But of course, with all these things, when you have a concern, the next problem is, well, where do you go with it?
Yeah.
Which is where we obviously step in. I think COVID-19 has introduced a whole stack of new problems. And very much part of that is kind of the now that you're not seeing people face to face, how do you adapt your practices? I mean, I personally am a very big advocate of video link technology and video link assessments. But with all these things, you know, you need practice and you need skill and you need time to develop those skills to make it a robust medium.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that, actually, because I was talking to somebody recently, and, you know, I was saying actually how, you know, exciting this industry is at the moment, and in the sense that we can avail of technology to help us with our jobs. And so I think there's always, like everything, there's always going to be two schools of thought, aren't there? You know, I would, you know, most people are going to embrace it, but there'll be others that will be quite nervous of that, especially from a you know, a capacity point of view, a vulnerability point of view. So it's really, you know, it's nice to hear you saying that actually we can embrace it and we can apply it on a daily basis to our jobs. And so how do you see it operating in the future?
So, I mean, my personal opinion, certainly at the moment, is that video link assessments and the use of video technology should be the go-to at the moment. I think it's from a health point of view, I think it's too early to really be opening things back up.
Yeah.
I was reading some interesting research and guidance by the Royal College of Speech and Language Therapists. They were talking about the use of face masks. You know, and there has been a lot of things in the press around how using a face mask, you're basically cutting out a significant portion of where we get the non-verbal language from.
Yeah,
you know, all the way around the mouth and the mouth area.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, if somebody's hard of hearing or they've got communication issues, to muffle that or to cut off that the ability to lip read is a huge addition to their vulnerability or their impairment. And of course, with video link, we can get around that.
Yeah.
Now, the other interesting bit was, you know, we get these masks now that have got the clear area so that people can see the lips. And there's been some research done that has actually shown that that is, or potentially, more confusing for people with autism or communication or dementia, where they're not able to understand why the face has changed shape, why there is that barrier around the mouth and the brain's not able to process that. So actually it becomes more distressing and more confusing to have that little window in the mask. It's really, really interesting where we are at the moment. And so I think if we can embrace technology, like video link technology, we're doing some awesomely exciting stuff with tech at the moment.
Yeah.
Around being able to assess capacity online in real time. And financial vulnerability online in real time, and that's going to be coming out in the next few months.
And how does I think I was going to say, how does that work if you can divulge through an app thing, or
it works in two ways. So we've built an app and the algorithm, and we can either overlay it onto people's current fact finds or you know, we're writing software or whatever it is, and interact with that using an API and put out technology and add our own questions and use its funky, you know, kind of algorithm in the background. Or we're looking to have it so that you can have it on an app in front of you or on your tablet, and actually it can walk you through and walk the client through. And at the end, it can say, look, yeah, they've got capacity for this, or they're vulnerable because of A, B, C, and D. So it's really exciting. It's really exciting, and we're looking to bring those on in the next couple of months.
Oh, good luck.
Yeah, thanks. And you know, getting back to the challenges and how we overcome them, I do think that now's a great time to be, you know, exploring technology. I think COVID, you know, has necessarily made us start to look at change and how we can do different things differently and better.
Yeah. Well, I think there's lots of positives that have come out of the last couple of months for, you know, for many businesses. And I think especially in, you know, the area that we all work in. So,
Andrea, do you mind me asking, what are the key positives for you?
Do you know what? I think it is linked to technology, actually, that you can still do, you can still provide your service remotely. To clients. I think there's always going to be, unfortunately, in the areas that we all work in, that post is still going to be an issue, whether it's inbound or outbound. But I think that, you know, from case management systems, I think there'll be plenty of businesses out there that'll either be looking to implement them, recognizing that they've still been working with a file of papers. Pre-COVID, there's obviously been lots of changes with HMCTS in the last couple of months, with them really ramping up the digital online applications for probate applications in particular. Yep. So I think plenty of positives, really. Yeah, and watch the spaces to the future, because I'm sure there'll be lots more coming our way. And I think practitioners have to embrace it, don't they? Really?
Yeah, they do.
A few moments ago, you said something about that over the last 5 years or so, you've seen a real shift in this area for the better. And when you say that, is it more around the understanding of the Mental Capacity Act, or what were you alluding to there?
So I think it's two things. I think, first of all, it's awareness that the, you know, of capacity, that it is an issue and it is something that needs to be addressed. And the other thing is I think knowledge. I think there's you know, there's much more training out there as awareness rises. So, you know, so people's awareness of what they need in terms of knowledge and training arises. And I think over the last 5 years, as more and more people have become aware of it, as they've received training, we start to see a real shift in the acknowledgement that it's an issue.
Yeah.
And you know, that practitioners are more able to kind of flag it up and identify there's a need and respond. Because at the end of the day, it's all about getting the right outcomes for your customers, for your clients.
Yeah.
And I think anything that enables that to happen has got to be a positive. And I think that's really, over the last 5 years, I think we've really seen that start to happen.
I recently had a conversation with Ian Bond. He's the,
oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, previous chair of the World's Next Generation.
Yeah.
And we were both talking about, if you look back to when, you know, in a previous life for me, when I was qualified as a solicitor, and you come out of law school, you're incredibly green. And, you know, you're dealing with somebody that, you know, is in the elder generation, or maybe not, and you're expected to have the skill set to assess somebody. Yeah. And also just those general softer skills that you develop as you get older and grow up, I suppose. And I think that's my, you know, I wonder whether there is more training around that now, or, you know, just greater awareness within, you know, private client teams, or whether you're a will drafter and wanting and understanding that, I guess, the demarcation line where you can take it to a point, but then that's when you need an expert like you or your colleagues to come in and take over.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's, you know, with the increased knowledge and awareness, you know, I would assume that as solicitors, as part of the supervision, as part of the, you know, your mentoring that you get, it will have become much more prevalent in there. And I think also, you know, you go back 5 years ago, the Act had been around for, what was it, however many years, 6, 7 years.
7 years, yeah.
Yeah, and we were starting to see some case law come through. But of course, the longer it goes on, the more case law comes through, and the more case law comes through, the more aware people become of, oh, actually, I can't do that because of this. Or I can do that because of that. And I think that also kind of has that, adds a momentum to it.
Hmm. And for those listening, where does TSF add value to somebody who's, well, you know,
I think, I mean, I think we add value in our expertise.
Yeah.
In fact that if you don't, you know, if you have a problem or you have a bit of a niggle and you don't know where to go, then you can come to us and we will happily chat it through with you, even if it doesn't end in a referral, but you've just got a, oh, I'm not quite sure what to do, then we can do that. We will talk you through it, we'll help you signpost it. And then if you do need a referral, you know that by coming to us, you've got some of the most robust assessments and reports in the industry. You know, I think we are unique in the fact that we have our own internal checking team, so that every report, every assessment that's done gets internally validated. And we've got a 49-point checklist to ensure that our assessors are using the right bits of case law, they're asking the right questions, they're setting the right threshold of understanding, that the information that has been provided has been validated and has been applied correctly. So I think that's where we really add value. And, you know, in doing that, it means that we remove any of the blockages that's caused by concerns over capacity, because we can give you the outcome that says, yes, you and your client can do this, or no, you can't. So it needs to be this other route. And I think it's that clarity combined with the expertise that is where we really add the value for the private client practitioners.
Hmm. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? We all can't be experts at everything. So, you know, having colleagues or partners around us that we can rely on, it's for the greater good of the client, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the day, it is all about the best outcomes for the client. You know, and you guys as professionals and us as assessors, we've all got that at the center of what we do, or at least we should do. And if you don't, it's a slap on the wrist to you. Not you, Andrew, but anybody listening. I mean, you guys will know that I love Horton from Horton Hears a Who. You know, and that phrase, a person is a person, no matter how small. And it's so vital that whatever we do, we have to keep reminding ourselves that at the center of this, there's an individual, you know, there's a person, and that we're doing it for them. Yeah. To get the best and the right outcome for them.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. It's paramount, isn't it? So, yeah. To wrap up with your crystal ball in front of you, what do you have any predictions, or you know, can you think about what's the legal sector facing in the next kind of, you know, 5 years? Any challenges?
I think we've already touched on the importance of technology.
Technology.
I think how technology is absolutely going to really start changing the way that things are done.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be interesting if there's a backlash from what's been going on in COVID-19. I was chatting to Stephen Lawson from FDR Law this morning, and kind of talking about the rise in litigation cases that are already starting to happen around, you know, because of practices that maybe went on at the start of COVID-19. And I think there's going to be a big challenge to stop, you know, the pendulum swimming back from where we are to more conservative ways of doing things. And it's interesting as well that, you know, we are just getting to the point where it's going before Parliament, isn't it? Is it today or very soon around the remote witnessing of wills?
And yes. Yeah.
You know, and actually what's that gonna bring, and how is that gonna change bits and bobs? And again, chatting to Stephen today, he was, you know, we were talking about the guidance, and he was telling me that at the moment it's not a legal requirement for a person witnessing a will to actually know that it's a will that they're witnessing. They just have to witness the signature. But of course, part of the guidance now is saying that you have to hold it up and say, this is a will. And so, that, you know, we've got all these potentially subtle changes that might be coming in. And so, you know, when we're thinking about what holds, it's, you know, we're in interesting times. I think we're going to be in some very interesting, exciting times as we come out the other side and, you know, the new legislation's passed. And then we see how that's applied and what the impact of that's going to be. Mm. I do hope the pendulum doesn't swing. You know, I always talk about the pendulum, you know, how it swings from one extreme to the other, and for a chunk of it, you're in the middle before it swings hard to the left and then back hard to the right. And I do hope that we don't see the pendulum getting dragged back, you know, to more, you know, archaic ways of doing it. That's not the right word. Ways of doing things and you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to get everything right.
No.
But there's going to be loads of stuff in there that is right. And so we've got to kind of measure that as well.
Yeah.
To get that balance.
And there'll be, you know, somebody there out there right now, you know, programming some whizzy technology that, you know, confirms that they were all present. Or, you know, or, you know, we're all there around at the same time remotely, or, you know, whatever it's going to be. And actually, that could be viewed as more robust than the practices that we have now, because, you know, I've heard of plenty of wills that are invalid, because as soon as you start talking to the witnesses about any, you know, issue on the will, they then come forward and say, oh, but we weren't all there at the same time.
Yeah.
And you have an invalid will. So, yeah, I think... Yeah. Really exciting times coming in.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for today. I really enjoyed that.
And it's been my pleasure. Enjoyed it as always.
See you soon. Bye.
See you. Bye.